Hello and welcome to this week's TES podcast. I'm reporter Dave Speck, and joining me is news editor Will Stewart. Hi, Will.
Hello.
We've got deputy news editor Mary Louise Clues. Hi, ML.
Hi.
We've got reporter Catherine Love. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Now, the big question, are schools ready for a full reopening on Monday? Are teachers ready? Is it safe? If you look at the ONS figures from this afternoon, more than a third of local authority areas have infection rates of more than 100 per 100,000, which, if you remember, was the threshold at which independent Sage scientists said it wouldn't be safe to open schools. And Catherine, I remember this story you did last week about this traffic light system that independent Sage proposed. What were the three tiers? What were the traffic light tiers? Can you remember?
Yeah, so for kind of like a green level, they recommended that would be like 10 or fewer new cases per 100,000. And then for amber, it was 10 to 50, and red was 50 plus. And then if they had over 100 per 100,000 new cases in the local area, then they said that schools shouldn't be opening.
When you look at more than a third of local authorities have that level of infection, Will, that's not a good omen, is it?
It doesn't look like it. I mean, I guess the thing to say on this is this: there's a wide range of opinions on this, and certainly as far as Indy Sage are concerned, then it is a concern. But then if you listen to the government, to Boris Johnson, Gavin Williamson, repeatedly, they've said schools are safe, and obviously, you know, there's other points to weigh up. But yeah, certainly looking at these figures, and if you take those traffic lights seriously, then it shows definitely not out of the woods yet.
Well, I went to the DfE and I've asked them to give to if they wanted to put their latest rationale across before we ran this podcast, and they haven't had time to get us that response yet. But in the meet, just very recently, I've spoken to Professor Gabriel Scally, who is an independent Sage member, and he's called for this regional approach to reopening schools, because he says that reopening schools in some areas could lead to a real upsurge, and that could be really serious. And those are his words, particularly in areas of high deprivation. And he's kind of saying this one size fits all approach is going to be discriminatory, to deprive communities where vaccine uptake has not been as high as it has been in more affluent areas. So, like you said, that's one view, isn't it? That's another view.
Sorry to cut in, Dave. It is interesting looking down. We should say these figures, the ones we're talking about, were updated on Thursday at 4 p.m. So the ones for today, Friday, have been delayed. So they may come down a bit. And it's a daily rolling average, isn't it, Dave? So they publish them every day or every week.
Yeah.
So by Monday they could be lower potentially, but anyway, looking at the ones that are above now, these third of authorities, you do see there's a bit of a pattern that there are a lot of fairly kind of deprived areas. I mean, it's almost like looking at the bottom end of a GCSE league table. You've got Bradford, Samwell, Hull, Barnsley, Middlesbrough, Blackburn. So, I guess cases are high there for the reasons that have been talked about before. You know, kind of denser housing and deprivation. So yeah, that does speak to what your scientist was telling you, Dave.
Yeah, he's very concerned about deprived areas. But another thing you mentioned was this New York model, where parents in New York are given a number for their child's class, and they can use this number to check whether there are this proper ventilation, or an air filter system, and whether any improvements need to be made to that classroom. And you know, that ties in with this thing about there hasn't been any measures to ventilate classrooms or to move into, you know, community buildings to sort of spread schools out into, you know, within other buildings in the community, which which is something else Gabriel Scali mentioned. And it just seems to be really concerned about schools reopening in certain areas on Monday. And that kind of ties in with what our story about the NASUWT and the DfE, doesn't it, Will?
This was something that basically the NASUWT, the second largest teaching union, it emerged, wrote right at the end of last month to teachers' employers, so to independent schools, to academy trusts, to local authorities, and basically was saying that if you were to send, I think the basic point was that if you were to send teachers back who've been unvaccinated and that they were putting their health at risk, correct me if this is wrong, Dave, you were in danger of breaching their human rights, which of course are protected by law. They're also, and they were suggesting that the suggestion was a fairly clear one to the employers, was that they were legally responsible, and that, you know, that government guidance saying that schools were safe to open wouldn't take away that responsibility. Now, not surprisingly, that has alarmed employers who have obviously got in touch with the DfE and said, what is the case here? And the DfE, in their update, in their daily update to head teachers yesterday, tried to reassure them. Didn't seem that reassuring to me. Can you remember the exact words?
The DfE said it did not automatically follow that any legal liability would rest with schools. And it kind of said that it was its view. It said that the Department for Education's view is that if settings follow our guidance, which has been endorsed by Public Health England, and meet their obligations under health and safety laws, then they will also meet their obligations under human rights laws. But that's just their view. So like you say, it's not clear cut. And it just seems to be a bit of a grey area.
I was going to say there's another quote in that story from Patrick Roach, which I think is worth saying, because it puts it in context, because it talks about what's at stake, but also acknowledges this, you know, we definitely shouldn't be scaremongering. It also says, makes clear that it basically talks about teacher death, but it makes clear that could happen, but it also makes clear that is likely to. It's a real possibility, but that it's going to be pretty rare, and it's quite exceptional. So
well, I've got that quote.
Yeah, that's best. We should let the words speak for themselves.
Well, it says, in rare but realistic instances, a teacher could die and or contract debilitating long COVID-19. This is not an exaggeration or hyperbole.
That's his view. That's obviously not others, but I think that.
I mean, if we could just move on to another sort of grey area, Catherine, because I know that there's some sort of confusion, lack of clarity, should I say, about pregnant teachers in the sort of the later stages of pregnancy, whether they should be returning to school. This is something you've written about today.
It does seem like there's some kind of inconsistencies or lack of clarity in the guidance. And essentially, having looked at what the guidance says, I think it is kind of at head teacher's discretion. And so this story came from a thread on social media where one assistant head teacher had said that pregnant women in the third trimester had not been treated well during the pandemic, that it didn't seem fair or justified for some to be told to go back into work from 8th March while others can choose to work from home. And having kind of looked at the guidance, it does suggest that, which is what this assistant head was saying, it does suggest that, you know, if your employer has carried out a risk assessment for staff, then you and you're unable to work from home, you can work in a public facing role. So there isn't anything specifically in the guidance to say that teachers in the third trimester should not be asked to work in schools. Although it does say that employers should kind of maximise potential for home working at that point. But during, you know, within that thread, there were teachers saying that they were sort of 35 weeks pregnant or 32 weeks pregnant, and that they were very concerned about the fact that they were having meetings with their head teachers asking about, you know, whether they should be going back into work and what, you know, what the guidance was. And we also had a comment in from the Association of School and College Leaders, which was, you know, saying that they understand that women in that stage of pregnancy are at a higher risk of developing severe illness if they contract COVID. And that, you know, for teachers and staff in schools, that means that their employers should undertake a really thorough risk assessment and allow them to work from home in a different capacity if at all possible. And that also, you know, people should only be working in a school environment if both you know, both teachers and head teachers and employers are totally satisfied that the risk assessment indicates it's safe for them to do so.
Wouldn't it be nice if the DfE had come out and been as clear as that, you know, rather than saying that? I think it said something like pregnant teachers should take a more precautionary approach.
Yeah, which I think really came across in this thread, and kind of having looked at the guidance, I would say that when I was looking into it, that it was quite hard to find kind of exactly what the protocols are. And it does seem to leave it up to head teachers and to employers. Now, a lot of people were saying on the thread, you know, that, well, I've been really well supported. My school said, you know, you can work from home at this stage if you're not happy coming into school. But there were some saying, you know, that they were kind of dreading meetings with their school because they felt like they, you know, that they were going to be asked to go back. And obviously, you know, that it is much more risky for someone at that stage.
Yeah. And I mean, just moving on, talking about schools going back, obviously that's the theme of this podcast. Gavin Williamson's caused a bit of a controversy, hasn't he, Mary Louise, at the Fed National Education Summit this week. And he talked about returning children need this strong sort of behaviour management approach, and that traditional teacher-led lessons are the kind of way forward. And that's caused a bit of a stir. What is wrong with that, Mary Louise, if I can ask you?
Well, this has sort of stirred up the kind of debate that we see around kind of approach to teaching. Gavin Williamson talking about a more traditional approach. He actually said in his speech at the summit that traditional teacher-led lessons with children seated facing the expert at the front of the class are powerful tools for enabling structured learning environment where everyone flourishes. And this has caused a bit of a backlash from some educationists and psychologists. A group of psychologists have actually put together an open letter as a result to Gavin Williamson, and saying that his approach and the kind of wider emphasis on catch-up that he's been talking about is actually going to put pupils who have had traumatic experiences during lockdown under more pressure, and they're concerned about that. And also that educationists have weighed in on social media as well. Neil Mercer, who's a academic at Cambridge University, said that it was a big lie to claim that this approach was evidence-based. So Gavin Williamson said it was evidence-based, and he said, is that another, he tweeted, is that another big lie to put on the side of the bus?
I saw that.
All the evidence supports dialogic, is that how you say that word, teaching? Dialogic teaching. But following that reaction, there has been some support for Gavin Williamson's stance from more traditionalists as well on social media. In response to Professor Mercer's tweet, one Academy Trust leader, Will Smith, said, "You seem to be suggesting what Gavin Williamson said is a lie. Actually, traditional teacher-led lessons for children seated facing the expert is exactly what we promote. Come and see our pupils flourishing." So, you know, so that, as always with this, with these kind of debates around how lessons should be structured and
behaviour management.
Yeah, behaviour management. There's always a healthy debate. But it's interesting to see that play out this week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sticking with you, ML, what's our on finally this week? Have we got a glimmer of light to go home for the weekend on?
Well, there's an organisation called the Freedom Foundation that goes into schools and promotes songwriting and music, music songwriting and music-led lessons. And they've come up with a list of tracks which that they recommend teachers could use when pupils are getting back to classrooms next week to motivate pupils, get them in the zone, get them ready for learning.
That's off the top 10 then, come on.
Well, I was particularly pleased. Well, they kind of break them into different what's motivation for Monday morning. I was particularly pleased the Monday morning ones because it has my daughter's favorite record in there, my six-year-old's favorite record in there, which is High Hopes by Panic at the Disco. I have to play that at least three times a day, so it's good to see that it's motivating her.
You're not going to give us a rendition, are you?
Oh, I'm absolutely
I've never
not.
Heard it. Come on, I've never
so
heard it.
So there's maybe you've heard of this one, a Curtis Mayfield, Move On Up. Dave, that's probably more in your...
Oh, cheers. Thanks. I don't remember that one, to be fair.
We've got Happy by Pharrell Williams. We've got Florence and the Machine in there. We've got That Friday by Riton and the Nightcrawlers. It's a popular TikTok one, that one. James, a bit of classic funk from James Brown, I Feel Good, for motivation at the end of the week.
Right, well, thanks for listening, everyone. Good luck on Monday, and see you soon. Bye.
Good luck next week.